Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 138, live from the Atlantic Security Conference. Here we go. Today I'm joined with two amazing guests, and I'll start with Andrew, the one I've known for a while. Andrew Cosma, he's one of the active board members and a founder of sorts of this Atlantic Security event. Did I get that right, Andrew? And tell us the big picture. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thank you very much. Yeah, Andrew Cosma. I am a co-founding and active board member with the Atlantic Security Conference. We had a few members come and go, but the nucleus of the organization is pretty standard and solid. And I think you can see it by the attendance today and year after year. Some nice holistic growth and fantastic contributors, like our esteemed guest,
yeah,
to my right.
You've been selling this guy ever since we were upstairs. Like to introduce everyone to Eric Conrad. Eric, how you doing?
Doing well. So I just got off stage. I had the honor of speaking after Cliff Stoll on the same stage. no pressure. Childhood hero Cliff Stoll. I got a selfie and he saw my first edition copy of The Cuckoo's Egg. Yeah, I'm Eric Conrad, SANS Fellow. I've been in the industry for 20, well, Unix system in 1991, says old man Conrad. We got hacked in 1993, and I dedicated myself full-time to InfoSec in 93, and 26 years later, that was a good call.
Yeah. Awesome. So you two are definitely the smart ones in the room, and I've really liked this event, and I think Andrew and I were talking. I think I've been coming since 2013. It was big then, but you know, this event had its origins. It was basically a couple people huddled around a little camp in a fire, basically, and now it's just taken over this really outstanding new venue. I think we're well over 700 people that'll be here today, which, you know, for the Canadian Maritimes, for an IT security event, that's truly amazing. I really admire what you guys do, the board, you, Travis, Stephen and the others, Daryl, and I forget the other guy's name. Nick, because he anonymizes himself a bit on the page. But anyways, I really appreciate your guys' work. And, you know, I always look at the security. You know, you guys are the experts, but a lot of the attendees and a lot of the people that I deal with, and hopefully the listeners of this podcast, it's always kind of a learning opportunity to always continually improve your security practice and how you implement things. And I guess I'll start with a question for you, you know, Andrew. When you look at IT security and particularly how you form and strategize this event, what's the goal? Is it just education or what?
Well, actually, I during the introduction, I should have introduced myself as not a sworn member, but in my current capacity, I work as the Chief Information Security Officer for the Halifax Regional Police. And just within the last 10 months, I made that transition. I'm a member of the executive management team, which means I sit at the table with some very important people with regards to policing our communities. And their sense of community aligns closely with my own morals and values and what community is. And we started the conference to establish the community. Eric alluded to meeting a child here in Clifford Stoll. Very much the same experience for myself. I was so nervous to actually. I wanted to give him the coin at the end of our talk, but I didn't want to flub it up either. So, to answer your question, they're closely aligned with my own sense of community, and we built Atlantic Security Conference from the ground up because. We were working for companies that wouldn't pay to send somebody to Las Vegas for Black Hat or a DEF CON. And gosh, there were guys like Eric Conrad that we wanted to hear speak, and Clifford Stoll that we would love to hear speak, but weren't able to secure the funding or get an employer that would provide the opportunity for us to travel. So Travis and I sat down, and he's had a number of conversations with a few other people. But I'll always remember him over a beer saying, I think we'll have to try and get them to come here and let's do this. And I was like, yeah, sure, you know, conversations over beer. And a couple months later, I never expected anything to come of it. And he called me and said, I got our first sponsor. And I'm like, whoa. Okay.
Wow.
So, and, you know, one of the things that I've learned from being closely associated with Travis and successful people in general is the will to execute and move to action is significant. So it wasn't just talk. it was, let's start doing some stuff. And here we are.
Yeah, and that's a great story, because you get one, then you get the other, and then, you know, then you've got a scope to manage, and then you have a budget, and you can put it together, and, you know, did the first one, it was probably one day, now it's two.
One day, one room, 90 people, yeah. Vendors in the room with us. Wow. And that included all those vendors and speakers, yeah. So it was small.
Yeah, and then now it's like there's a plenary session, there's a big room, small room, huge spread. I want to guess there's 40 sponsors up there?
Not quite 40. We're pushing close to 30. Okay. Many of them are return vendors.
Yeah.
What's interesting is the addition of the villages. So last year we introduced the Lockpick Village with Sparrows, and they're back again this year with all their toys and trinkets.
And they have them for sale.
Yeah, absolutely.
I actually might just go back up there and buy some.
And we introduced the RFID Village this year as well. So, it's fantastic.
That's awesome. And, you know, the content I've seen here is, I'd like to say it's that extra level of learning from a security perspective that isn't overly sanitized by some of the big mainstream events. And I get the bit of, you know, accessibility, basically, of traveling for training, because a lot of times commercial organizations, that's a tough ask for the travel costs, hotel, or registration, you know, thousands of dollars potentially. So outstanding. And I think, you know, if you haven't, for the listeners, check this event out. I've done a couple of podcasts here before, but it's atlseccon.com, and I'll put the link in the podcast notes. And we'll get to you in a second, Eric, but we get people from all over here. I mean, I come as a sponsor, probably farther than most sponsors, but from a demographic standpoint, I know 2 years ago when I was here, we had some individuals from large government agencies near D.C., wondering who that could be, you know, for their own learning, right, which was very interesting. People come from all over.
Absolutely. As Israel and Baltimore.
Israel and Baltimore.
So last year at the speaker's dinner, so for the speakers that we do accept, of course, we extend an invitation to join us as our guest at a speaker's dinner. And last year, I make an effort to introduce myself to people that I hadn't seen before, and it's getting more and more difficult.
I would imagine, yeah.
But I bumped into a few different people, and I was surprised they had Baltimore and Boston and, even Maine.
Yeah. Maine.
And so, Eric, you made the trip from Maine. Real question is, did you drive or did you fly?
I drove 550-odd miles. I am pulling double duty here. My son's attending Dalhousie University. He's a computer science major.
Okay.
Just finished his freshman year. Actually took his last final yesterday, so he's chilling out. And he's taking summer classes. He's doing a computer science major, music minor. He plays 7 instruments. So he's basically falling behind on his major by taking music classes, so he's catching up by taking summer classes. So I drove up so I can move his dorm, and I figure while I'm here, I've always wanted to attend this event for years now. But it's hard when you travel as much as I do to squeeze that extra one in.
Yeah.
But since I had the excuse to do it, I'm here. It's awesome.
Awesome. And so, Eric, I'm going to ask you, because I think I counted 2 different times that Andrew messed it up. So, as I understand it, you've written a couple of key curriculum books for SAN security training. Is that right? Give us your summary bibliography in regards to your book.
Well, outside of SANS, I was lead author of the CISB study guide out on Syngris and the 11th hour study guide. A lot of people know me from that. I also have now co-authored 4 classes for SANS, 511, which is continuous monitoring security operations, 542, which is web app pen testing, 414, which is CISSP, and the most recent one, 530, which is defensible security architecture. My talk today was pick some slides from that class. Yeah.
Defensible security architecture. Now that looks like, honestly, was that 513? 530. Sorry.
Yep,
I'm probably going to go Google that and look that up, because that sounds very interesting. And if it starts with a 5, it's a more advanced.
Exactly.
Course.
It's like a 5 at a level college class is what it's aimed at. So advanced, you're like a junior, senior in college kind of a thing. Yeah.
So if I'll put you on the spot here, because I think that's pretty cool. If you would give one like practical tip from that 530 book. In that course of sorts, what would you offer as a practical tip for the listeners?
It's hard to pick one. It's like picking your favorite kid, you know. I would say the simplest thing most companies could do, and I talked about it during my talk today, and that, by the way, go to ericconrad.com. First hit is that talk.
So
if you want to know what I'm talking about, ericconrad.com. First hit, you'll see it. I would say stop, break your network into three VLANs. I'm being tactical now, virtual LANs. Divide them at least three ways. Servers, IT clients, non-IT clients. And then once you've done that, don't let non-IT clients talk to non-IT clients. Don't let them send traffic to each other, meaning don't let them attack each other. If you have 10,000 computers, 9,000 are non-IT clients, you know, 800 servers, 200 IT clients. If you turn that on to either private VLANs or the host-based firewall, you prevent clients from talking to clients, you're reducing the ability for malware to move laterally. We call that pivoting. When malware hits one box or a human penetration tester hits one box, it moves laterally. Often the first box you hit, the first system, is not the system of interest. It's simply behind enemy lines. Mm-hmm. You're behind that first firewall. You've achieved the first goal of breaching that first firewall. But often it's just the first click, the first person who clicks on an email. That system may have very little interest to you as far as the data on it. Now, the data meaning the documents, the spreadsheets, things like that. There's other stuff like passwords and hashes you want. Mm-hmm. But if you stop clients from talking to clients, you reduce what's called the attack surface of that network dramatically through a fairly simple change that's usually very low impact.
Well, it also sounds like it's a fairly simple change. I would say it's low impact to everything that's being changed, but I'd say it's a high impact to that additional level of resiliency you get.
Sure.
You know, in one way, it's a very strong change.
Right, so the impact I'm talking about is the total cost of ownership as far as the IT time. I'm a sysadmin originally, so that's how I'm thinking.
Okay. Yeah. OpEx and all that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The total cost of ownership of implementing that change. But as far as to the malware, it's a high cost change. And that's the whole point. One of the things you should always do in your environment, I call them asymmetries. Blue-red asymmetries, blue team being the defenders, red team being the attackers. If it's easy for the blue team to do and you're making the red team's job much harder, do it. And so you have those force multipliers when it's like, it might take me an hour to make that change. Now the malware is going to take an extra 2 or 3 days to actually pivot. You're winning, the malware is losing.
Why you make the red guys the bad guys?
The red guys, well, I do pen testing too.
Okay.
But you know, meaning the attacker. Now maybe it's an attacker you paid to pen test you, that's fine. Or usually it's not. It's an unpaid pen tester or malware. But yeah, you want to make their job harder. You should relentlessly make penetration testers' jobs harder. I say this as a professional pen tester.
Yeah, right.
Our job is too easy.
Yeah. So that's great. I think my homework is to incorporate some of that proper language, because you described it a heck of a lot better. Because in my talk, I was talking about the high level, not letting backups be the back door to your security policy.
Sure.
Because that's, you know, it's touching all the data. Right? It's a very
kind
of compelling idea, but I need to incorporate some of that language because I'm not a security professional, right? I'll oversell myself and say I'm a backup professional, but the thought here is that, you know, when I'm talking to security experts and I'm trying to incorporate security terms, I should probably leverage some resources like that. So I'm going to take a look for sure. And then, so Andrew, like, you know, in that practical tip category, you know, especially with a new role, you've had some previous experiences, I'm sure, that have led you to this. I think in the last 6 years, would this be you've made two moves totally. Then.
Two moves.
Yeah. So, you know, I've got a little bit of lifer in my DNA. Right? So I'm now at, this will be my 9th year at Veeam. But, you know, I've talked to a lot of security people in the process of what I do, and that's what's formulated kind of my perspective here. What's your kind of practical tip from a security perspective that, you know, based on all your experience, that you might want to share for the listeners?
Well, certainly. So previous to my employment with Halifax Regional Police, I did work for a leading security company, cybersecurity company in GoSecure, and I'd led a number of engagements and cybersecurity assessments and audits. I wore that hat for the last portion of my time with GoSecure. And further to Eric's, I would say, logical segmentation and then isolation, I always have three questions whenever I walk into a client or whenever I'm providing service to an organization. My first question is, what is critical data for the organization? And the second question is, where is that critical data for the organization? And the last question I always ask is, who has access to that critical data? And those build a foundation where you can start to present key performance indicators and key risk indicators and start to talk the C-level suite language where you can present risk and ultimately give the organization the tools and the knowledge it needs to make good, sound security decisions to support a security practice.
That's a great place to start, because you could probably cover a lot of ground from that first question to identify where to start, because I'm sure a lot of organizations have plenty to do.
I said it a few times, actually, and in a couple of my talks. It's like blues music. It might be simple, but simple ain't easy.
That's all true. Right. It's true.
Right.
Now, let me flip that around. When you walk in for those types of questions, you know, based on your prior experience, and I'm sure you had clients of all types and all situations, everything from in the middle of an emergency to then simply just wanting to do better. I'm probably sure you've seen it all. How accurate are the answers of questions number 2 and 3?
Most organizations, if they understand what is critical to their operation, they don't know where it is at any given time, or who, in some cases, who has access to it. So that's where I say, sounds simple, but simple isn't easy. Mm-hmm. And that's where you can start to leverage frameworks like the NIST cybersecurity framework and a risk management framework combined. But that isn't where the fun of security is. Those frameworks should be treated like blueprints on how to build a home. So you could say there's the door and here's a wall and there's going to be a window there, but the fun of security is the interior decorating, where you say, well, we're going to paint the door yellow and the wall's going to be blue and we're going to have this type of window, et cetera, et cetera. So you take the framework to establish good groundwork, foundational stuff, and then based upon your organizational requirements, you tweak it to meet your needs. One of the earliest things, and it was at SANS training, and I'm super excited to hear that he authored it. It was Tanya McComb.
Yep.
She was my instructor for CISSP in 1998.
Wow, that was before I stepped in. That's awesome.
Is it 1992? Wait, I was in Vancouver, so it was 2005. Sorry, 2005, 2000, okay. SANS YVR. I went to Vancouver for it.
Got it.
There you go.
But anyway, a little bit of history there.
Hey,
yeah.
There you go.
Well, and it's funny because, I visited Halifax a number of times, but I'll say that there's actually a pretty strong IT security community here. I know there's one particular vendor has a center here that develops solutions around security. A couple of the firms you mentioned as well, so... it's a very interesting event. I do events almost exclusively, right? And every now and then people are like, Halifax. And I'm like, no, you gotta hear the story of this group and this event. It truly is something special. So, and the new stuff, like the Lock Village, the IoT and RFID centers you mentioned, great extracurriculars to add to the attendees. And I think you guys have some good stuff going on. So I guess as we start to wrap up, Eric, anything you're working on in the future, any new books that we could look forward to? I mean, we'll direct everybody to the website link in the notes that you mentioned, but anything coming up in the horizon that you'd want to share?
No, my wife has made me agree to stop writing books because I'm apparently unbearable when I'm doing that and hard to be around. So my wife talks to me a lot about my work-life balance, which she claims I have none. I disagree, but if you do what you love, you know, don't tell my clients this, but I would do this for nothing if I could find a way to swing it. You know, I just... You know, when I got into InfoSec, it wasn't for the money, because there wasn't any.
Right.
You know, it really was. It wasn't. There was no. My first job at Unisys had been $21,000 a year. I made $21,000 a year. Now, $21,000 a year was worth more than 91, but it was still not a lot of money. Okay, no matter how you slice it, no one got into this for the money.
Right.
And people are now rushing in for the money. We have this thing in Silicon Valley. They call them programmers. Programmers are rushing in. Like, it could have been real estate. It could have been Wall Street. Now this thing's making money. I'll do whatever that thing is.
It's,
you know?
It's a new type of coin-operated individual.
And people talk about passion, and sometimes passion gets a bit overplayed. I don't define passion as I'm working 80 hours a week. I define passion as I love doing this thing, right? And not that you have to love doing it, but if you're going to spend 28 years doing something, it sure helps if you like it. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Most definitely.
So
yeah,
I don't have anything major coming up. Security 530. I just want to tack on one thing Andrew said, because I agree with it. Sorry,
sure.
I'm extending the podcast. When he talked about three questions, I want to tag on. Great point. I ask IT people and just general people, where are the bodies buried? Like, what's broken? Like, if you could fix something, what would it be? Because usually they know everything.
Yeah.
They know what's broken.
And yeah. Or what do you not want
right,
me to find?
Right,
what do you not
right,
want
right.
me to ask?
Like, what keeps you up at night? What's if you talk to enough people, you figure the whole thing out.
Yeah.
And they've been going to their management for years recommending stuff, and management's been ignoring them. It's an odd thing as a consultant. 10-year veteran of your company,
yes,
has been there for 10 years. He or she tells you something, the boss ignores him. I walk in a suit. I don't walk in a suit. I don't wear suits. But I walk in. That's the wedding or funeral. I'm not in a suit. But I walk in and say the exact same thing. I literally parrot their words. Suddenly, yeah, we need to do that.
Yeah. It so, has so much weird... more gravitas from the expert. That's such a weird thing.
It's dumb. It's broken. But
yes,
that's...
this flag is red.
Right.
And we need to do something about it. Your staff has been saying it for years. I don't know how to bridge that gap, but...
So for new stuff, Security 530 is our newest baby. It's the last class I wrote, Defensible Security Architecture. We just got a cert for it, a GX cert, rec attempt GX cert. I'm teaching it a whole bunch. I taught it on four continents last year. I called it my 530 World Tour. I visited 11 countries last year. So come see me or someone else.
Outstanding.
Teach something. That's fine.
Great tip on... You know, actually, you could... I'll take what you guys kind of jammed out here. Make that a practical tip. If people start new jobs, ask the what, the where, the who, and then the where are, you know, the what's the real problems, right? That's a really good base just to take whatever you're doing, system admin, architect, new stuff in the cloud, right? To just take that mindset into the next thing you handle, and you can actually just implement some of these design principles. Great stuff. Now, Andrew, I know you had the new job and all, so anything new we can expect, or maybe what's, have you already identified things for next year's Atlantic Security Conference that might be different?
Well, I'm pretty certain Eric Conrad will be back.
I'll be back.
Yeah.
Now it's official. I'm on tape. I'm an old man on tape. That's not tape.
No, it's not
I'm
tape
being
yet.
Recorded.
You're on flash.
Yeah. And absolutely. So, I mean, we started it when we said what Atlantic Security Conference, what we wanted it to be.
Yeah.
It was so that people like Eric would come and share their knowledge with our community.
Well, yeah, and those listeners out here, make the trip. Come on out. A very reasonable cost, by the way. The current price was for an admission, considering you get like two brekkies, the two lunches out of it, and a party.
And close the party.
And a social. And guys, I got to tell you, this party is legit, and this is coming from somebody who goes to Veeam parties a lot.
And Halifax is a great city.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful city. People are friendly, a lot of great restaurants. It's a great city.
And you'll fall in love with Canadian maritime folk music about standing on a Halifax pier. I may or may not have fallen in love with that at the last party. So, anyways, guys, we can find Eric on Twitter at Eric_Conrad, and we can find Andrew at K0Z1CAN, cause one can, because one can. There we go. Well, thank you guys both for being on the podcast.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.